This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBolay.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
This is Open for Business. I'm Christine Wong. It's safe to say that the pandemic has given us all a lot of time to think. And maybe throughout it, we have been looking for the right tools to facilitate this journey. And with their eighth year in the business, it's clear that Stickerific, a stationery and art supply store, is still going strong in helping their customers with this journey. So I have founder Sito Weiwen on the line to tell us all about it.
Hi, good morning, Christine. My name is Sito Weiwen. I run Stickerific. Stickerific is a little stationery store located in Petaling Jaya. We're located in Jaya 1. So we've been around for the past 8 years. We started in actually 2014, around the same time now. So actually our 8 year anniversary is coming up. And at that time, Stickerific really just started as a small Instagram shop. Back then, I was a wedding photographer. I was an event photographer. I was a writer as well. And I think one of the things that I was doing was running photography workshops and events, taking photos for clients and all that. And during one of the events, we had to run a photo booth. And I actually stocked up a lot of stickers for the events because it was for a children event. It was for Easter, if I'm not mistaken. And then after the event, I was stuck with so much stickers. I had no idea what to do with them. And coincidentally, at the same time, my sister had given me a notebook as well. I actually decorated that notebook and people started to want to buy the notebook. And then because I had all these stickers as well, I started a small Instagram shop called Stickerific just for the sole purpose. I didn't even think of the name at all. But looking back, I would have put in a bit more thought into the name. The name isn't the most easiest to pronounce as well. However, I think because of the catchiness, basically stickers are terrific, you know, and you combine the both words together. And right now, today, we don't only sell stickers, we've expanded to do so much more, which is primarily journaling, which is the core of what the store promotes. So we carry a lot of notebooks from all over the world, Japan, Europe, the US, UK, China, Taiwan, Thailand at some point, and also a lot from Malaysia, actually. We have like a few huge brands from Malaysia, and we're actually looking to bring in a few more in the coming months. In fact, we have one more coming in this month. And then we expanded to do things like what can you do in a journal as well, and that has led to calligraphy, fountain pens, inks, rubber stamps, wax seals, because we also promote like post-crossing and snail mail, anything to do with the art of writing, basically, watercolor. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, all these different hobbies and things that we use can be directly led back to journaling. Mm-hmm. So with journaling, it's really about the art of storytelling. You know, we're trying to promote the idea that anybody can write, anybody can be an author, you know, not in a big scale. Anybody can be an artist. You don't have to be somebody who graduated with a degree in art or, you know, in communication and all that to be able to piece together something that you can be proud of. It can be a personal story that you keep for yourself, you know, just to maintain your sanity, or it can be something that you share with the people around you. Because sometimes storytelling just does not only mean sitting down and telling your story verbally to others. It could mean like doing a scrapbook, writing it down, coming up with a painting, mm-hmm. And just sharing that on a platform like Instagram or Facebook.
Right. Mm-hmm. So basically, I think from all of this, you have always been very passionate about expression, I think it's safe to say, right? And, mm-hmm. You know, first you had the initial form of expression where you had this experience with photography. And I also understand that you also have had some broadcasting experience as well, which is all about, you know, mm-hmm. expression and telling stories and putting these memories into perspective. And as a result, you know, this seems like a very natural progression for you to move into a space where you're providing people with the tools to do that. So you mentioned that you started as an Instagram store, but you do also currently have a brick and mortar store. So could you share with us a little bit about that journey and that progress, how you went from just a small Instagram store and then you built that up into having an actual like location?
Okay, so even though we started as an online store, we actually did have a retail presence from the very beginning as well. It started as like a small one table in a photography center that was in the school Jayawan. But I wouldn't even consider it like because all the sales were actually from the Instagram shop. People would just like place their orders through DM and then I would send it out. And conveniently, there was a post office downstairs, you see. And at that time, there was nobody going to the school Jayawan because it was more of a community mall, but it was a very education, children-centric mall. So it was totally zero for the first year. And then subsequently in 2015, we moved to a more hidden lot that was much closer, smaller, also in Jayawan. So actually, our current store that we're in is the fourth store. We've moved four stores ever since. So each time we needed a space, we would move and move. And that was happening every 2 years. And even a year before the pandemic, in 2019, we were actually looking to relocate. However, we decided against it because we thought it was a little too difficult on us financially at the time, even though our tenancy was up. Because our tenancy had to be renewed for a certain amount of years, we decided to just stick at the old store. And, you know, it was sort of a blessing as well because COVID hit like 3 months down the road and it was probably for the best, you know, otherwise we would have to, you know, bear a lot heavier burden. So basically we were doing the online thing and the online part was helping pull people to the retail store.
Got it.
It was a very small premise. However, I realized with a retail store, I could play with the displays actually. Mm-hmm. The good thing about being in a creative sort of environment is that a lot of things people didn't expect was that I was teaching myself a lot of things on the go, not only about business, but also on art, because I didn't really have an art background, you see. So everything from watercolor, painting and all that, like calligraphy, lettering, all these I had to learn on the go. And it was mostly because people were buying things and they were like, how do I use this? What's this for? And I had to go figure it out. Because I didn't like giving people no for an answer. And I think that's how our inventory expanded as well, because people kept asking, like, would you bring this in? Can you carry this item? I saw this, you know, from somewhere else. And I would be, yeah, sure. So for the first 3 years, I wasn't even sure if I was making money. Every time I just saw money in my bank, I would just like buy stuff. And it was to the point where our inventory was growing. And I even had to withdraw all my childhood savings, everything that was in bonds, you know, all my funds at that time to support the business. And I was still doing wedding photography on weekends, like during the day. And then I'll come back by like 11 to 12, you know, after the morning ceremony, take care of the shop for a little and then do the edits. And then because at the time there weren't many people in the shop yet, like customers. And I did most of my delivery during the weekdays and then the evenings I'll go and shoot again. So that was how I was funding the business for, I think, the first for like 1-2 years. And then my partner joined me. My sister actually joined me in the third year. And she's an accountant, you see. So in a business, I think that's very important. Yes. I need one person who does the creative work, but has no idea. Like,
you got to have one numbers like, person and one sort of like right brain person, I guess.
Correct. So she's the one who's always, you know, keeping me accountable. She's the one who manages the finances, telling me like, okay, we need to not spend too much on this, you know, this one sells better than this, and then keeping track of like trends and all that, because I can be quite impulsive actually. But I think that's the good thing sometimes, because you tend to not use so much logic when you do things. It's very intuitive and you have a hunch, I think people will like this. But then you have no evidence that people will like this.
Look, as a notorious overthinker myself, I frankly envy the bounce of impulsiveness. And I think that's also really important as an entrepreneur. Sometimes you have to have these leaps of faith. I guess sometimes, in a way, being impulsive means that you're more willing to sort of just try things and then you're not as worried about, you know,
failure.
Yeah, which is important, you know, you can't hold yourself back all the time. So I think that's really interesting. And you know, you mentioned as well that you had this retail space and you also, you started to do these workshops and a lot of these other experiences where I think the best way to put it is like peak events for introverts, right? Where you guys get together and you would do, you know, these workshops and stuff like that. So tell me a little bit about how that got started and then also maybe a little bit about how that pivoted during the pandemic as well.
Okay. I think when it comes to art, there is this stereotype that these are things for children. You know, parents would send children to art workshops, but there was very little other than, you know, paint and sip corporate events or those sort of like adult kind of art workshops. Mm. There was a, it was more of a casual thing rather than an educational thing. And what happened was that I was doing a lot of one-on-one sessions with customers who came to the store, because at the time I had time. People will come, how to use this, and I'm the sort of person who will, I feel bad selling some people something that they don't know how to use. So I'll just sit down, teach them. And these sessions can go up to like 2 hours, 3 hours. And these are free sessions, right? These are just like consultations. And I don't think any other store owner will actually sit down and then give you the time of the day sometimes. And that would actually result to a lot of late nights for me, because I still had a lot of work to do and it will last until like the late mornings. So what I started to do was to actually run groups of workshops. So I started like charging people like really cheap back then. Okay, maybe 10 people per class, 5 to 10 people. But surprisingly, people actually came, attended. That was a real shock to me. I think this was during our second year. And that continued on. We started in 2015 and we've been running workshops all the way up till now. Initially, I was the only one doing it. Then after a while, I started getting other customers who were good at things. These weren't even like professionals, actually. So a lot of it was from one hobbyist to another, you know, and then along the way we improve our craft. And I think it's better as well. Of course, carrying like a professional now, I try to get more professional teachers. But back then, starting out, I realized that it was easier to see how the everyday person would communicate to the instructor. Because most times when people are not very articulate or they have not had any art background, they feel very intimidated by a professional teacher, because they would use language that was a little too out of reach for them. So they didn't feel very comfortable. But when you talk to people in a way that is more of a sharing experience, which is also what we try to do. Like, if you don't want to attend a workshop, we have journal jams or art jams, for example. And with journal jams and art jams, it's very casual. People can just come around, sit and hang out with one another. Oftentimes, people are actually very quiet during these sessions. But they often leave very satisfied and happy, and they will tell us on social media after that, they'll message us. And that's the beauty of, I think, our business. It's not a thankless business, unlike other businesses where people just come to you and you want to complain about something. Yeah, we do get that as well. But however, we also get a lot of people who, you know, write us like, you know, letters, you know, from all over the world. Even people who have never been to the store, they shop online, purely online, or they've experienced our store through Instagram stories and all that. And they tell us that it's like they know us without actually ever being to the store. And it's for some of them, it's a dream to, you know, come someday. And workshops really bring the community together, allow people to see other people, meet other people who like these things. Because oftentimes people who do stationery and art, especially adults, you see, again, I mentioned that stigma that it's a very childish thing. This was something that I also went through when I started. My parents were telling me, no, go and get a proper job, don't waste your time doing this. How old are you already? And at that time, I think I was about 27 or 28 when I started this. And when I started this store, I only had 2,000 bucks in my bank account, 2,000 ringgit. And I spent 1,000 ringgit on stickers at that time. And it didn't sell. And that was really my push to do something about it. And when my parents, you know, I know they were very, my parents are very, very supportive right now. But back then, it was very difficult for me. And me being a very stubborn person, I felt that I needed to prove to them that this wasn't another one of my failures or another thing that I couldn't stick to.
Well, clearly, you know, I think safe to say that you are definitely still sticking to this. You know, I think 8 years is a fairly a decent amount of time to prove your commitment to a project. But also, you know, I think one of the things that you mentioned earlier was community. And I think it's a massive testament to, I think, this very customer-centric mentality that you seem to have, where your community actually was able to support you in that time and able to get those workshops started with that, with those hobbyists. And I also completely agree with the idea that sometimes, in a very funny way, professionals are not necessarily the best at teaching something. You sometimes need someone who isn't a professional in order to get down at base level and be able to especially get people started with the basics. So I think that is really fascinating. But we are going to take a short break for some messages. After that, I will continue speaking to Sito Weiwen, founder of Stickerific, a stationery and art supply store here on Open for Business on BFM 89.9.
Open for Business will reopen in a few moments. Powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Be free, Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Open for Business is powered by BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
You're listening to Open for Business. I'm Christine Wong, and I'm speaking to Sito Weiwen, who is the founder of Stickerific. Stickerific is a stationery and art supply store that has a focus on promoting journaling and other forms of artistic expression. Now, before the break, we talked about the initial inception of Stickerific and how Sito got started as an entrepreneur as well. I do want to ask a couple of questions a little bit about some of the logistics surrounding the business, because you mentioned before the break that a lot of your notebooks, for example, are imported from different countries. So could you tell me a little bit about the decisions behind that? And also, considering the fact that there have been kind of global logistics issues with supply chain problems, could you tell me a little bit about if you've experienced challenges in that field as well?
Yeah, so a lot of our products are imported, like a huge, I would say actually a huge amount. I think probably you can say 70% of our inventory, probably 60 to 70%. Initially when we started, it was mostly like almost 99%, I would say. But I think within the first few years, we started making our own products. But in terms of importing, the decision was because I think everybody grew up with bookstores like Popular, Times, MPH, though these are the places where we would get our stationery from. And these were often labeled as school or office stationery. And these are very different compared to the kind of stationeries that we carry. So what we carry is more towards fine art stationery. It's for people who want to enjoy writing, who want to have a more pleasurable experience. And it's very important. It's not just what pens you use. It's also the paper. It's how the pen feels on the paper. It's how the ink glides, and smears and dries. There's just so many things that comes to writing, It's not just the tool. A lot of people might see, okay, what's the difference? A pen is a pen, or a notebook is notebook. Why do you need such a nice notebook? And unfortunately, although Malaysia is a paper supplier and paper producer as well, which is why imported notebooks are quite highly taxed when they come into Malaysia, about 20%, obviously because we produce this in store. However, our papers they're not produced for those purposes, like for ink and all that, mainly for printing, for like ballpoint pens and everyday writing. So in order to increase the appreciation of people towards certain products, what we did was to import. And then after that, subsequently, we would go to local manufacturers and producers who produce notebooks and all that, and give them these samples and ask them if you could match the quality of these products now that there is demand. Because initially when we started, we did go to like local producers of notebooks, and they said that nobody wants these things, nobody's willing to pay the price for all these items. And this was the same for certain fountain pens and stickers in the beginning. When I started the store, because I was nobody, I would go to some of the pen brands and ask them, can you bring this in? I know people want them. I want them. And they're like, no, you're the only person who wants them. So what I did in the beginning was actually purchase off the shelf. I would travel to Japan to buy things, or I would use Rakuten to just buy things at full price and then sell them high, because the margin was so small. I was making a really small margin, but I wanted to prove even to suppliers that there was a demand for such products here. And it was a very exhausting journey. It was only after there was a demand and people started going to other stationery stores to ask for them. So other stationery stores obviously have a better leverage because they have been in business with most of the brands for much, much longer, you see. And they were able to pressure the brands to bring certain things in, even though I believe that we were the ones who were doing most of the legwork in the beginning, doing content, doing the samples online, you know, talking about them and all that. So that was a lot of the initial work. So a lot of the brands that we carry directly, of course, the prices have gone up due to raw material increase and also shipping prices. And that has affected us greatly. I think in the last 2 years, a lot of the suppliers tried to hold the prices during the first year. But towards the end of last year, I think unanimously, almost everybody came up with a statement that things will go up and this will actually take into effect more or less this year. And then having a bigger store with like higher costs to run, you know, more, our team also expanded in the last year. We went from a 3 to 4 people team to right now we are about at 7 people. Having a retail store also increases the cost of things. A lot of people actually close their retail stores to remain online. And online, you can offer a better price and all that. But doing what we do, I feel that the retail store experience is so important for the longevity of the business. Because through a retail store, you can offer community, you know, events and projects and having people come and see how they can use the product in real life. The problem with an online store is that you don't get as much customer service. Nobody's going to sit there and explain to you. So I think we did come to a point last year, due to many lockdowns, we were asking ourselves, do we downsize and focus on the online sector? Or do we actually go all out? And because our lease was ending at our previous place, and, you know, try to go all out despite what market conditions were telling us. And we chose to expand, go for a bigger store and try to go all out with the retail experience. And actually, since we moved in October, with a lot much larger space, we've been able to carry a lot more newer brands in the last few months. So despite the higher costs, we've had to push more on marketing. We are resuming workshops, but we've had to take a back seat this month because of the rise of cases, actually.
Of course, yeah.
But hopefully that can resume in May onwards.
I mean, I don't know about you, but whenever I go buy a new pen, I want to try it out.
Right?
I mean, it's the basic level of sort of interacting with that product, right? You know,
we had to take the customer experience online, actually. So what we started to do was we would do shop tours during the pandemic. So we did a lot of live videos. The first time I did a shop tour, it was in April 2020, actually. So people were saying things like, oh, we missed the shop, we missed going to the store and all that. So we would do like mock shop tours, like take people around. Okay, this thing just came in, this thing just came in. And we would do like product demos, like unboxing videos of us unboxing new stock, you know, using them and then showing people what they actually look like. So they were like virtual, you know, experiences for people. And then we realized that, okay, now that I can't do workshops, what could I do? So at the time, I was very uncomfortable with the idea of running virtual workshops. I was so resistant to it, even though there were some of our other instructors who were starting to do it. But again, a lot of our instructors who used to do in-store workshops were very, they didn't want to do online workshops at all because it's a different kind of persona, you see, putting yourself on a camera and then you're talking to yourself because you don't get to interact with the customers. So it's very one-sided. So I think that's very difficult for some of them. And even for me, it was. However, I just told myself this was something I had to do, we had to do. And I don't think we have gotten this far, if not for our customers, really. And the thing is, when we went fully online during the pandemic, the thing is people are now, their options are not limited. Because when it comes to retail store, you can say, oh, I'm supporting the retail store, right? I'm buying the experience, whatever I'm paying. Because obviously, we are not going to be as cheap as like Shopee sellers or like sellers online. And when you are stuck in a situation where you solely depend on online sale, people's mentality would be to choose the cheapest, right? That's the thing. And I think everybody was really tight during the pandemic. So yeah, it's understandable. So we had to differentiate ourselves by doing more, I think, free content. And hopefully in return, people would support us. Because obviously if you want, you know, there's always that belief if whatever business, you where you spend your money is the kind of future you want to see. You know, you put your money
where your mouth is.
So, and I think a lot of our customers who know the the value of what we do and yeah. what we're trying to do for people and all. And I really, really appreciate that. I think we're very, very thankful to that. And even as we ease out of the pandemic, this was something that I decided to continue doing. Mm-hmm. So we still do like live sessions every week, live product demos, what's new in store mm-hmm. and all that for people who are unable to come to the store still, even though the store is already, you know, back and running.
Mm-hmm. I do want to wrap up the conversation a little bit here just by asking, you know, how are you guys doing? Are you guys seeing an improvement, you know, or any sort of upward trends, at least since, you know, we're slowly coming into this endemic phase? And also perhaps what are some plans for the future of Sigrific?
Things were actually on the pickup, I think, towards the end of last year. And then it stagnated a little, I think, due to Omicron coming. But I think right now we sort of know what to expect, having gone through like these multiple phases. So I think instead of panicking like we used to the last 1-2 years, I think it's very important that we know, okay, this is a phase, you're going to get through it. Unfortunately, that's the thing. It's, you can't rest on your laurels. You know, when things are difficult, you work hard, and things, when things are good, you also work hard to sustain it, you know. We wouldn't be where we are without the customers, really. So at the end of the day, everything we do, it's how can we give back more to the community? Even whatever we bring, we think of how this item can benefit people. How can what we do, our service and all that, you know, be of any help for people? Especially, I think during the pandemic, a lot of them were going through really tough times in terms of mental health and all. So things like, you know, our nightly painting sessions, these were things that people really look forward to. Having, you know, even a parcel come in the middle of the week, of a hard week while working from home, is something people were looking forward to. And my team has really, really, really worked really, really hard during this whole duration to listen to the customer, be there for them. Sometimes people talk to us on like chat, our chat systems and all. And it's not just about product inquiries. People are just like randomly sharing with us their life, their things, everything they're going through. And we realize that even people who come to the store and they talk to us, they just want somebody to talk to. So I think that's the sort of our business, that listen and also encourage people to share as well. So I think, because at the end of the day, it's all about communication and using, you know, writing or painting or art as a medium to do so.
I think in a way you guys are really putting the therapy in retail therapy.
You know, true. I hope to do that. You know, people like to describe us, you know, as the place where, you know, when I'm having a stressful day, I look forward to coming to your store. It's nice to be, you know, that kind of, I really hate the word business sometimes, but I guess that's what we are at the end of the day. It feels like I'm working for my friends, you know?
You guys are like a reprieve for people. Feeling. Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of today's conversation. But thank you very much to Sito Weiwen, founder of Sigrific, for talking to us today all about her business.
Thank you so much, Christine, for having me.
You've been listening to Open for Business. I'm Christine Wong, and I've been speaking to Sito Weiwen, founder of Sigrific, a stationery and art supply store here on Open for Business on BFM. If you've missed any of today's conversation, you can go ahead and download the podcast. That's available on both our app, which is on the Apple App Store and Google Play, and also our website. You're listening to BFM 89.9.
Are you open for business? Register your company with BossBully.com, Malaysia's first online company secretary.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.